25 years ago, Carrie Bradshaw started posing a slew of honest, provocative, relatable questions in her fictional column, Sex and the City. And just like her, the singles and hopeless romantics of New York still want to know, can you change a man? What constitutes cheating? And can you be friends with your ex? I'm Tara Llewellyn. You may know me from Gilmore to Say, a Gilmore Girls podcast. Join me as I revisit this beloved series with some of my favorite New Yorkers and closest friends as we bring Carrie's column to life and answer her questions from each episode of Sex and the City in my new weekly podcast, And Just Like Her.
Love Letters is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy. Hey there, it's Meredith. Today, we've got something extra fun for you. A few weeks ago, we did a live podcast taping at the Comedy Studio, which is in this cool outdoor market in Somerville, Massachusetts. I brought out some special guests, and we talked about how we make the show. We read some letters, and we even discussed how season two inspired me to talk to a man with a nice jawline. I hope you enjoy it.
And now, welcome to the Love Letters Podcast Live. Please welcome your host, Meredith Goldstein!
That was very comedy-like. I have to tell you, so it's the Love Letters Comedy Weekend, which meant that last night I was co-hosting with Rick Jenkins, who runs this lovely place, and I have spoken to a lot of groups, and I have never been so nervous as I was last night introducing comedians. There is something, first of all, I could only see the front row. Second of all, I had like immediately sweat through my clothing. There's something about knowing that people have arrived expecting you to be funny. Like, if I'm funny, usually when I do public speaking, that's like a bonus. It's not the expectation. So I want you to remove that. And even though this is the Love Letters Comedy Weekend, let it be a bonus again. Expect me not to be funny. If I happen to say something funny, I'll have exceeded your expectations. That's how I like to have it. I realized also that I was having a lot of anxiety backstage because I've never done this podcast without taking a break to pee, blow my nose, use my inhaler. And usually we probably make it about 35 seconds, and then I'm like, hold on. And then I blow my nose really loud. So I backstage, I was like, wait, I should pee now because it's just, it's happening. It doesn't stop. So I will tell you that this is a live recorded recording of a podcast. That does not mean it is going out right now. It means it's being recorded now and will be very much edited and then put online, which means that I might blow my nose. And no one will know later. It also means that the inhaler is on the desk, as are the tissues. Basically, this is going to be sort of a program of what we normally do for the podcast, where I'm going to sort of recap what we did this season, have some special guests, and then when it appears online, you will hear some highlights and you will know all the secrets and you'll know what everybody looked like and it will be amazing. So I first just wanted to thank you for coming. I joke that when I was young, I declined the offer to have a bat mitzvah because I had no religious education and it felt like a little fraudulent to like pretend I knew Hebrew to get gifts, which was essentially what my mother was offering. And I was like, you know, I'm just going to take a pass. But the joke is that now that I'm an adult, I keep having parties and gatherings like this one over and over in a way that suggests that I've been resentful of not having a massive bat mitzvah my whole life. In fact, when I first had a book party, I wore like a party dress that suggested I was just bat mitzvahed. It was like pink, like the color of cotton candy. And I was like, this is not what an adult author does, but maybe I only wrote this book to have this party. So thank you for putting up with the fact that I love to gather people and then make them listen to me. If only I knew Hebrew, I would bless you all. Mark Shanahan, my colleague, is here tonight. And our favorite Onion article, for those who read The Onion, is, oh no, they're coming into the audience, which is about theater. And he and I both feel that way when we're at a theater performance and the people start coming into the audience and we're like, oh no, they're coming into the audience. I promise you, I will not come into the audience, but you will see a mic right here. And when I ask for audience input, I would love it if those of you who do not hate that part of the program to come up and share some stuff, and I'll cut it off when we're having time issues. But anyway, thank you for coming. How many of you have been to this venue before? It is wonderful. It is all hooked up to record a podcast. When I first got a tour of this place, the wonderful people who run it explained to me that they felt as though comedy club bars did not have to be gross with weird drinks and like flat Diet Coke in a plastic cup. And they have succeeded in turning a place into a good date place. The cocktails are fantastic. And last night after the show, there was like a full pickup scene. I would say like people were super attractive also. It was very odd. So I highly recommend if you're not on a date right now or want to be on a date coming back, because I was like, oh, they're all at Beau Market. And every time I talk about Beau Market, and I think it's happened on the column, I start to be like Stefan from Saturday Night Live, where I'm like, the new hottest club is Beau Market. There's an Oyster Fest. There's a comedy club. There's a dog sleeping in the comedy club. There's a photo booth. Anyway, I love it here. So thank you to the Comedy Studio for hosting. So I just thought I would introduce, does anybody not have any idea what Love Letters is? And they just wandered in here and they're like, what the fuck? It has been 10 years. What it has allowed me to do after doing it, when you first start writing an advice column, you have to have like no imposter syndrome. And that was easier to have with the internet of 2009, where you were like, no, I am amazing because I am online. There was no social media, little did I know. 10 years later, I can be a little bit more thoughtful about trends, about things that I've learned, why people do what they do. I think a lot about that. The most common problem I received in the early days of Love Letters was about snooping, and I write about that in my book, but everyone was breaking into each other's email accounts and text messages, and there was just this incredible widespread invasion of privacy. And someone asked me the other day if that continues on now, if people are still doing that, and I realized that I haven't received a snooping letter in a really long time. And I think that's because with social media, we are so plugged into what our partners are doing all day that we don't have to snoop. That, like, we know what they ate for breakfast. We know whose photo they liked, right? So the real most common problem that I'm seeing now, which was not the case in 2009, is dating fatigue. When I started this column, you could date online, certainly, but people were not dating on their phones. There were no dating apps, not really. I mean, there might have been like the early origins of that, but Tinder was not Tinder. And you know what wound up happening was that dating became something you could do all day and all night. So the most common letter I receive now is, I am so tired of doing this. And that's why when we started this podcast, which was not my idea, I believe it went something along the lines of somebody mentioned a podcast. I was like, well, maybe. And then Linda Henry was like, you have to do a podcast. And I was like, okay. And what I said was I didn't want to just talk about letters in a room. I wanted to do a narrative. And I actually think I was stupid enough to say I want to do Serial for breakups. And it was clear at that moment that maybe I had never listened to a podcast. In fact, at that moment, I went into iTunes on my phone and was like, how do you find podcasts? And someone said to me, that's not where they are. So that's where I came to this from. But I really did want to focus that first season on the most evergreen problem I will ever receive, which is about getting over the grief caused by breakup. So that whole season was about that. But when we went into season two, I thought, no, I want to do the question I get most now, which is, how do I meet someone in a world where like you can be connected to anyone and yet completely disconnected from everyone? How do you make a meaningful connection? I learned so many things that I thought I already knew. It's been a pretty interesting ride, but it certainly reflects the kind of letters I get. I just wanted to make a small note, which is that, did anybody listen to season one of the podcast? So there's an episode about music. I think it's called The Night I Became Roy Orbison. And in it, we interview a colleague of mine, Patrick Garvin, who could not be here this afternoon. And he is such a good playlist maker that I quiz him with, what if you have this kind of breakup? What if you have that kind of breakup? And he comes up with a song, like, rapid fire. And he has a website called Pop Culture Experiment. And he just comes up with playlists, like, every 2 minutes for any person, any occasion. And the music you heard while you were waiting was Patrick's curation of songs for us today. So you'll be able to find it online. I will post about it. I knew it was going to be good because it started with Paul Westerberg's Waiting for Somebody from the movie Singles. There's a mashup of Gautier's Someone I Used to Know and Carly Rae Jepsen's Call Me Maybe. Howard Jones' Everlasting Love, because he knows I love Howard Jones. And in fact, he threatened to make the whole playlist Howard Jones because he claims that there's a Howard Jones song for every stage of meeting someone and being with them. And if you're too young to know who that is, Google him. So season two was actually quite difficult for me because it forced me to confront some of my own problems, God forbid. Amy, our producer, and where's Amy? Amy Padula, who produces the Love Letters podcast and edits out all of the nose blowing, she said, I really want to follow this season someone from start to finish through the episode so that we're not just answering one question, but we get to know someone who's really dating now. And you'll meet her soon. Her name is Erin. And I joke with Erin when I started following her that I began to like do this sort of anthropologist in the wild thing where I'd be like, Erin, she's a 44-year-old single woman. She's in a bar. What is she gonna do? And I began to speak of her as if I was not a 41-year-old single woman, as if I had just... So in watching Erin navigate her life as a single person who was never desperate to get married, was never certain about what she needed for companionship, but knew she wanted a partner. Like, there's a big difference between not wanting to get married and not wanting to be with anyone. And watching her figure out what that meant in her life and what she was going to do about it hit far closer to home than I ever expected. So some of the episodes that meant the most to me, one was when I got to call my college crush, Matt Dorfman. Another was about work romances, because especially in this era, it's so hard to accomplish and to hear from two human resources people about how they broke every rule to be together. It kind of put perspective on when it's not worth doing that. And I say that as someone who has dated in the workplace and failed. And randomly, one of the interviews that meant most to me was with one of our experts, Wednesday Martin, who's written some controversial and fun books about different social communities. And what she said was, when you have a crush on someone, it's so rare these days that you have to honor that feeling. And I was thinking about it last night. We were here, my sister and I were here for the comedy shows, and there was a young man with a very strong jawline. Brett's shaking her head because she was not into him. In fact, she was like, I should wingman for you, but I just don't like him. But in the moment, ordinarily I would have noticed the jawline and just moved on with my life, but I was like, but Wednesday Martin said on my podcast that I should honor the feeling. And I turned to Brett and I was like, I want you to know that that man has a good jawline. And everybody was like, okay. You're gonna, you know, but it was just a moment. And I, for whatever reason, I took that very much to heart. So if you see a jawline you like, take a moment. I want to bring up, this is very weird, by the way, sitting at this desk. It feels very Tonight Show in a way that I'm like, this is the most Jimmy Fallon I'll ever be. And I'm okay with that. Our first guest comes from a town called, actually, where were we born? We were born on the Jersey Shore, and I don't know where I was born, apparently. She is my sister. She's an easy guest to get because she has to come because she's related to me. And I will say that, like, having a sister who is this funny and charming and interesting is great for me because it means I don't have to do that much. Welcome to the stage, Brett Goldstein. Yeah, you can. Yeah. You don't need a coaster. I mean, I don't think... Oh, there is a coaster. I didn't even... She's so polite.
Shit pig.
This is very odd. For those of you who don't know, my sister is a casting director, and that puts her in a big position of power because she gets to decide who gets jobs, really. But I thought it was very interesting this season. I mean, you spoke a lot in the first season about breakups, and you are the highlight of many episodes. But in this season, you talk about helping people meet. But part of your job is choosing the right person for a position. And I just wonder how your casting director background influences the advice you give to friends about dating, influences the advice you give to me about dating.
Oh, like last night with a guy with the
job?
Yeah,
she did not want to cast him in the part.
Yeah, because the
in the part of making out with me, she did not want to.
No, because it's like an archetype thing, right? Like,
he might be listening at some point, so don't. So be. I mean, who? I don't even know his name.
I'm gonna be a dick for. I know.
Okay.
What?
Napoleon complex. You can just tell he's a douche, and like shorter than me. Like, it's not gonna work.
But you know, I love men who are. I don't trust tall people in dating because I can't see what's happening. Like, I had dated someone who was quite tall, and I feel like sometimes I was like, what's happening? And he would just look up. And the conversation was over. It's handy for him, but...
No, like, what's happening? And then he can be like, oh, like, she's pouring that... I don't know. Like, there's a... It's nice to have a tall person sometimes. At least, like, an average situation. I don't know why... You don't want to...
The physical thing was it, but you also got a vibe, right?
Yeah, no, you got a vibe.
Okay.
Right, because that's the thing, is that, like, if someone's a dick on set, I get blamed, right? So you just start to, like, form, the, like, I'm gonna, like, a little bit of a rash. Like, it's like a little bit of an allergy. You know all that.
Okay, stuff. Yeah. Yeah, I do.
If someone might be, like, you just feel it.
But how do you advise people, like, when somebody, a friend says to you, I'm having trouble picking a partner, or I'm always picking the wrong person. What do you tell them? Because, you know, based on your own experience.
Well, generally, it's so hard because I've been doing this for so long, but, like, I can tell by the picture often. Let me tell you a little story. Okay. So, like, you don't have to be, any idiot can do my job. But this is the thing, after you've done this for a while, I played this game once with a friend's six-year-old daughter. This is Hope's daughter, Maddie, at the time, right? And I said, I'm casting a six-year-old girl as the lead in a film. She couldn't even read. I was like, just pick which ones are good. Like, look at the pictures and tell me which ones I should call in. She picked every single kid I would have called in. And she could just tell from the pictures, like, who was talented, who was intelligent. She's six. She's not going to second guess herself. So when I look, for example, at my best friend's Tinder shit, I'm like, are you a fucking idiot? Like, of course this guy is the worst. Like you could tell by the picture. Like,
how do you feel about a man in a Tinder profile who's holding a fish?
Yeah, I don't know about that. Well, the tiger thing is the one where I'm like, bitch.
Wait, like where they've, what's...
Oh, tigers, right? Tigers are a thing.
Wait, are they doing something bad to the tiger? Or are they just near a tiger? Okay.
No,
it's not like a Trump
tiger
thing.
In Thailand.
Oh.
It's more likely to have a tiger than a fish, right?
Well, here, nowadays. I don't know. New England, there is a ton of fish.
Oh, right. I don't know. What
are these men have caught.
It's not in New York.
No, these men have caught fish, and they would like you to know.
Okay. So for the motherfuckers of cash, like that, is that a tiger situation? You tell me. Huh? Fish.
It's
no, but
fish.
I'm saying, is the fish like the tiger?
No.
Less douchey?
It's oh, my God. Everyone's like, no, it's douchier. It's douchier in the front row.
That's what I would think. Like, if I saw a guy with the fish, I'd be like, oh, shh. Plus, if I, like, then that's your future, motherfucker. That's your future. Like Grandpa Chan.
Did Grandpa Chan fish?
He just had a fish up on the wall. And it's like, you're a Jew. Get that off. Come on. You didn't catch that, motherfucker. Like,
you can see what we edit out. For the Boston Globe podcast. So, okay.
He didn't catch that fish. Like, you know he didn't catch it. Remember that fish in the basement?
Or he caught that one
in his, like, man
fish.
Cave, but it was for, like...
Yeah. I mean, I think it's also hard. I mean, I think the common thing that people see is that there are many people in one Tinder photo, right? So a wedding party. Yeah, that to me is... And Lane Moore, who was a guest this season, who does Tinder Live, which I highly recommend seeing, you know, she likes to play a game called Which One Is It? Where there's like a bachelor party photo of eight guys and you have to figure out which is the one guy who's in every photo, which is the one common denominator. Which
that
one?
Takes a certain and the whole of sobriety. That's
oh hard. My gosh! And the whole audience yells, "Which one is it?" Which it's you never quite know. So
I love this.
Yeah. In episode 3, which is one of my favorite episodes of this season because it's about geography, and it really brought an answer to the question of like, would it be easier if I lived elsewhere? You know, for all the Bostonians who are like, if I lived in New York, I would really have a great partner, and the New Yorkers who are like, actually. You wouldn't. you mentioned a theory that I thought was ludicrous. And then I got all these emails from people that are like, your sister is so wise. And I was like, but what? do you want to explain importing?
Yeah. So this one, I married this one. This is my husband, Ben, everybody. Ben, everybody. Yeah. Okay, so New York, you don't want to date, especially in New York and LA. And I don't really know what it's like here, but you don't want to deal with this kind of bullshit, epic bullshit in New York or LA, because I feel like people are in New York and LA for themselves and like for their career. They're not there to like, you know what I'm saying, right? So I just feel like if I were dating in New York, I would definitely go for like minimum age 65. Like I wouldn't even, for sure. I'm like turning 46 in August. I would 65, that would be minimum because I'd be like, let me just deal because the guys that are my age, it's a whole thing, right? So like, so if you import, you can get a real mensch. So this one, I found, I mean, I met him at the Bryant Park Holiday Market and I said, I'm having a party in 2 weeks because I was going over to fuck the friends and family members of my ex-boyfriend who's from Israel. And I said, will you come to my party and make out with me? It's my going away party before I go to Israel for a few weeks. And he said yes, and then he did, and then we did, and then we got married. So
this is like just like that.
And so I just feel, and Ben was from Kingston, which is like, I mean, really nice. So I was like upstate, not really nice, like rich people. He's poor. He's a glassblower. Like really nice, like upstate New York, Hudson Valley. Like he's like salt of the earth, amazing guy. Now, Ben was born and raised in Brooklyn, but only till you were what, like 8 or something? Right. But he would have been a total douchebag had he stayed there, probably. He left soon enough. I mean, he was in Westchester, which is also super douchey. But like then he ended up like being upstate and being like a really, really good guy. And I was just telling Aaron that I went to Nashville recently and I was told that like this one girl who was married that collects these gorgeous single bearded men as like action figures. And I was like, wait, he's not your gay, he's straight. Uh-huh. So she's like, there's like 5 of them to every 1 single woman. And the women are terrible.
I went to Nashville and I just saw a lot of bachelorette parties.
That's what I'm saying. They're fucking terrible, well, right?
So like, they weren't from Nashville. I mean, you know.
It's like all the women, they're one big bachelorette party. So like, you guys can be like here, like in Boston people, go to Nashville.
And bring them home is what you're saying.
Or like plow, I mean, and then, yeah. or bring them home. But you can just like get them. They're like candy.
Yeah. I see, I was like, it doesn't seem like you can order up someone like from Amazon just by going like,
yeah.
But apparently I was wrong based on all the people who emailed me and said, okay. So you heard it here first. If you don't have a partner, you can just import one.
I'll tell you where to go.
You said Colorado,
remember
right?
That bagel place in Maine when you took me there for my bachelorette party and I was like that motherfucker and he was ordering a bagel and you were like,
I'm about
to get married, dipshit.
I wish you would say like two, we're going to have to edit out. Say it once nice? Yeah.
Okay.
This is how it works. When Brett and I record for the podcast, I'm like, try it again with no bad words.
She just goes, nope.
Do it again.
Okay. We went.
And then there's no, I've taken away all the vocabulary.
Meredith took me to Portland, Maine, and it was like, I wouldn't call it a bachelorette party because we don't,
my kind of bachelorette party.
Yeah, we just sat and watched TV and then like, but at one point we went to a bagel place because I was still eating gluten and I was like, that guy's fucking hot. And that guy's hot. We went to a bagel place and there was a guy and he was good looking and I was just like, that guy is very attractive. And this is why I sound like I'm on coke through every podcast episode because it's hard.
When you hear it, it's the 5th time she's done it because I'll be like, do it again,
right.
Do it again.
No, okay. And then this guy, and you were like, you're here because you're about to get married. Stop looking at that guy. I'm just saying, I was like, well, that one I would import.
Oh yeah, no, it's true. Well done. You did really well without the swearing. It's really hard. We were raised in a home where there were no rules about swearing. So I think maybe the thought was that if it wasn't forbidden, we maybe wouldn't use it. But in fact, it worked the other way.
We weren't allowed to have sugar, though.
Yeah, it's true. I wanted to give you a few letters from the 10 years of Love Letters before we move on to the next segment, where I just was curious about what your advice might be for some of the letters we received, because we give sometimes similar advice. We meet somewhere in the middle. So last week, on June 4th, I received a letter from someone who, did anybody read, "I'm moving to Milan, he lives in Milan"? This is a young, I didn't even look to the left. From a young woman who was studying in Florence. She says, "During my last days there, my friend took me out for some fun. We went to our usual bar, and I saw this really cute guy standing near the bar with his friends. Later, our groups were sitting near each other, and we wound up having a great conversation. It was beautiful chemistry."
He's a real Italian?
He's a real Italian. He told me he was originally from Milan and was just visiting his friend in Florence, and after some talking, he kissed me, and it was the best kiss I'd ever had. We were loving every moment of being together when he implied we should go further, which is when I told him I'm inexperienced and didn't want to do more. He was understanding and sweet. He said, "You're leaving tomorrow, and I'm also going back to Milan. We will probably never meet again, and you should be with someone who can be with you." After we left, he asked for my number and said that if he's ever traveling near me, he'd love to visit. After I got home, I was in tears. It's been 4 months, and he hasn't contacted me, and I don't have his number or any other contact information for him. From the beginning, I was in love with Italy and always wanted to go back, and coming from the design industry, that's the best thing to do. Recently, to advance my career, I was advised to move to Milan. And now I'm actually planning to move there in a few months. I was just couch surfing, planning my move, and I saw his profile. Since then, I can't stop thinking about him. What should I do? Should I send him a message or just deal with my thoughts? Because I have no idea how he would feel about me being there or if he actually cares or not.
Wait, when you say saw his profile, we don't know, like...
Well, one commenter said, like, were you just walking by it? Like, you just happened to find the profile of the man you had no contact information for?
I'm just wondering, like, because isn't there this thing, like, where you, what's the website? There's a website where you can, like, couch... In other words, is that the profile? Like, it's basically, like, you can sleep on my couch.
I mean, maybe. Maybe.
That's not recorded.
That's true. Fair. What advice would you give? Even if she did find him through that.
So she's asking...
She's like, should she reach out?
Why wouldn't she reach out?
Interesting.
Hold on. Wait, why? Wait, what did I miss? Hold on, this guy... We don't know if this guy is, like, with an... All we know is this guy did not... We're assuming this is a woman, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's a woman, yeah.
Okay, because you taught me about that. Don't always assume.
You don't always assume, yeah.
Right.
Oh my gosh, we're having an audience. I love this.
So basically, the guy was like, "I'm not gonna sleep with you because, like, she's like a virgin, and I don't want to, like, deal with this," right? Like, that's kind of what she was saying, right?
Yeah, like, he's not gonna have a one night stand. Yeah,
right. Like, this is not a good idea. So, like, yay. I don't know. I had sex with some, like, real Italian guy off of Craigslist. Remember that? I think I talked about that in one of the
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, yeah.
But what you're saying, you don't think he's gonna get the text and say, "Oh God." Or the message and say, "Oh, now she's
stalking my ass and, like, yeah, here for me." I don't give a shit. Like, here's the thing. Like, she can just be like, "I know this is, like, creeptastic, but here's the funny part. Like, I'm actually I just got sent here. Like, I'm working here." Like, I just think that, like, if she approaches this like a friend, like, at least she can feel it out.
One thing that
why would he contact her if she lives in America? Why?
Why not? I mean, that was...
But she was never talking about moving there, right? She's like a virgin. I'm not virgins are like, "Nah." I'm just saying that, like, they were making out and he was like, "Okay, I'm going to pump the brakes." And then, like, I mean, what did he... Can you go back? What did he say to her?
He said, "You should be with someone who can be with you."
Yes. But, like, but what did he say to her about contacting her in the future?
If he was traveling there.
But he's right.
Right. I mean,
Exactly.
I did say something similar. I said she should reach out, but not with the assumption that he was then going to, like, be her husband. And that,
yeah, like, funny.
But I did one thing that the commenters did not believe: she was randomly moving there. Oh, great. Okay. By the way, I got a text from Mark Shanahan during this, and it was just a picture of us, which was nice. But when you get a text during the live recording of a podcast, all you're thinking is a body part of mine showing, and is my friend trying to tell me to cover it up? And that's why I just checked my phone, because I was like, what if there was a comedian last night who had his fly down the whole time?
He did. He's so talented.
He was very talented. So anyway.
Mark Shanahan looks hot today.
Yeah. But a lot of the commenters, number one, did not believe that the woman was actually moving. Like, they believed she had come up with the story and was really moving for him. And number two, that it was too random that she'd wind up in that part of Italy.
So they think she's lying in the letter.
They think she's lying in the letter and lying to herself. They also said, one piece of advice that I really did like that I had not given was that they said, you're just couch surfing. When you move there and establish yourself and know some people, then you can reach out. Like, deal with your stuff. And I liked that piece of advice. Like, I'll be moving there. Are you there? Are you available to me? It was like a bit much for them.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I loved that advice.
Get your act together.
Get your act together.
And I mean, if she's crazy enough to write that to you, she's gonna boil a bunny in his kitchen.
Listen, it's when you're in it, it's more difficult. She might be here tonight. Who knows? Actually, she's couch surfing in Italy, I imagine. So,
I mean, why is she couch surfing if she is like a don't? Why is she couch surfing?
Well,
we don't know.
We don't know. She's looking for a place. Looking for a place. Okay, so I'm gonna do one more. Yeah. Okay. This next one is from 2018. And I loved this letter. The headline was, he doesn't post pics of us on social media. My boyfriend and I have been together for about 7 years now. Last year, we took a break for a few months and then decided to get back together. Ever since we have gotten back together, nothing has been the same. His behavior has changed. He no longer takes pictures together and posts them on social media, invites me out with his friends or family, or even just asks me to be his plus one. I believe he could be the one for me, and I really do love him. I just hate being so jealous when he goes out and doesn't ask me to go with him. I dislike having to watch him share it all on social media, the fact that he's out with his friends. I feel like that's something I can't force him to do with me, and I understand that his friend's time is time for himself. But if he says he sees me in his life in the future, don't you think he'd bring me, the girlfriend of 7 years, to family dinners and friends' outings? I'm trying to understand why I get so jealous when he's around his friends and I don't get asked to come along. So to me, this was like two things, right? There's the I'm not being asked to come along, and then the issue of social media, which to me is something else.
I mean, do you agree that, like, I feel like we can both agree, this guy sounds like a real piece of shit.
Well,
yeah, like, that's
sure.
Not fair, right?
So, I can't say this guy's a real piece of shit in the Globe, so that's not quite what I said.
What did you say?
I said, well, the first thing I said was that, you know, I talked to a lot of couples about social media, and I have friends who have been upset that their partners don't post enough about them. Right. And so the first thing I said was, separate from this man, not everyone wants to share that part of their life, especially if they're in a relationship where there have been breakups and getting back together. And it's like, it's not a narrative that's always meant for everyone.
Or when you're like I would say, I mean, we are like, you know, for as slutty as I am from like the neck up, and it's pretty bad. Like, Me Too has been a horror show for me, you know, Mark. Like, with you, it's like, I feel like, I mean, I'm obsessed with you, but how often do we really take pictures of ourselves? Or it's like, once you get to a certain point in a relationship, you just don't really think about it. But that's not this.
Yeah. So my thing was, it's actually not really about the social media. You should be invited to things and a part of that. It's clearly the insecurity of the relationship. Right.
Yeah.
But I also think, you know, and this is just separate from this, I also think that when couples, yeah, no, stop that. No, there are still Globe subscribers in this audience. My gosh, you poor things. So interesting. So we agree on two. Okay, so now...
What did you say? Did you say, like, break up with this bitch? What did you say?
Rarely do I say you must X or Y. And honestly, because, you know, when you get 200 words of a letter, you're getting a piece of information, and you're often missing a lot more. And so... I wasn't as overtly, you know, break up with him.
I feel like when we get, like, when we're, like, old Jewish ladies, I want to have an advice column with you where I'm just, like, you know, die, or like, whatever. Like, you're just, like...
Counterpoint,
blah, blah, blah,
right.
Blah, blah, blah. You're the Dr. Drew, right. My Adam Carolla.
I don't want to be Dr. Drew.
I mean, but...
Sucks.
Yeah. He's hot, though.
Okay, yeah. Great. Okay, moving on. Just before we move on to the next segment, was there one podcast story in anything in season two that stuck out to you? Yes? Yes?
Like, because, you know, I've fried my brain with drugs, but the hearing, like, the memory of the Matt Dorfman thing, of you talking to me about it, and then... and then hearing you tell the story again, and then you acting like a fucking idiot. That was amazing. Like you.
Well, I shouldn't have asked. And I should have known.
So when you get all giggly and stupid, and you're like so stupid on the... Once she interviewed Paul Rudd and Jason Segel, right? Remember, for I Love You, Man?
Yeah, who puts like, me in a room with her?
For like 2 straight hours. Yeah. And some of the, it was so
oh, you
cute.
Should listen to the transcript of the audio of my Robert Pattinson phone call.
I have. It's amazing.
It's terrible.
Yeah, it's great.
My voice starts getting higher and higher and higher.
Yeah, you have like a speech impediment with allergies, and then you have like
yeah,
a then you, your
bit.
Voice. When you
we'll get back to the live show after a short break.
Do you watch Gilmore Girls every fall?
Or every night when you fall asleep?
Us too.
I'm Tara and this is Haley. Hi, Haley.
Hi, Tara. We're the hosts of Gilmore to Say,
the Gilmore Girls podcast.
Gilmore to Say is not a rewatch podcast.
Boy, with the recap podcasts already.
Every Tuesday, we come together to debate the best storylines, offer alternate endings for ones you wish had gone differently, and answer questions like, is Lorelai a good mom?
Is Luke Danes just Emily Gilmore in a baseball cap?
And why does everyone hate Rory Gilmore so much?
Gilmore to Say is a caffeinated love letter to everyone's favorite fictional small town. So grab a cup of coffee and get comfortable, because we always have more to say.
So after I brought my sister up on stage, it was time to bring out another special guest. If you've listened to season two, you know exactly who I'm talking about. The one, the only, Erin.
Yeah. Okay, Erin, where are you? Come on up.
Where are you?
She comes with a full drink like a smart woman.
It's because I gave Brett my drink and it's been over there.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me up here.
When we had a Love Letters anniversary party a few weeks ago, and people kept coming up to me and saying, is that the Erin? Is the Erin here? Which was really exciting. And I've received many emails from people who felt very connected to your story. So I just wanted to start by talking about how you got involved in the podcast, because we did not know each other before this started. So why don't you tell everybody how this went down?
Sure. Well, I'd read Meredith's column throughout the years, and but then I saw her book was coming out. So I signed up for her mailing list to go to a book event. And so I happened to also sign up to see her, not knowing it was her, interview Catlin Moran for her new book last year. And then I went to an event the very next night to meet Meredith for her book event. So I was like, hey, I was at your event last night, but I'm not a stalker. But I was like, oh, I love Catlin's advice for playlists. And then Meredith was thanking people for coming, and I wanted to ask the question of like, what do you do if you've tried everything and you are about to give up, but you're like, you want to meet someone, so you don't want to just sit on your couch. And so I wrote her a letter, and it was just really brief. And then she said, well, I want to post this in my column, will you write more? So a few days later, I wrote more, and that was about a year ago, and I didn't hear anything, so I was like, oh, okay. And then mid-October, she emailed me and said, well, I have this proposition, and you can say no. Do you want to be part of the second season of the podcast? And I was like, yeah, because I love podcasts, because I'm a dork, and also because I just love storytelling, and I love hearing people's stories. And I thought, like, my experience was so common because I have a lot of friends who are in the same position and have tried, men and women who have tried a lot of ways and are really frustrated. And I was like, I know no one has the best answer, but at least, so I said to Merritt, we had a phone call, and I think I was calling, she called me and I was at Wegmans or something. And I'm like at the massive salad bar overwhelmed. And I was like, I don't think I'm the right person because I've deleted my profile from everything. Not just the app from the phone, which I probably did every other day. But I was like, I'm not there. And she's like, no, let's try it out. And I was like, all right. So I was like, I hope this isn't a disaster. But it wasn't. So.
Well, it was when I received the letter, I had met Erin, and when the letter came in, she said, we met at this love letters vent at Harpoon, and so I knew who it was. And I kept not answering it because I like wanted to save it. And it was really when Amy, our producer, said that she wanted to follow someone, I was like, I know who this is. And it was important to me to have someone on the podcast who would be honest about how difficult it was, would also have perspective. And I will tell you that it's not that I don't believe it's easy to date in your 20s. It's not. In fact, I think in some ways it can be said that it's harder. But I didn't know what kind of empathy. When we have a 20-something letter writer, people are like, you just wait. Or like, you know, it's like they're like, you know, and what's fascinating, which, yes, but, so for in episode 9, we talked to a woman, Nicole, who I used to work with, and she's the one who took all the classes. And at back in the day, I'd be like, oh my gosh, she's like 27, and she will not shut up about needing to be married. But the bottom line is now that I'm in my 40s, I'm like, here's the thing. Nicole wants to get married. She wants to have children. It was on me to make the judgment because, frankly, she was looking for a partner, met someone right before she turned 30. She's now getting married at 36 and wants to have 35, 36 and wants to have children. So, like, there was nothing. It's not that she couldn't be alone. She just knew what she wanted. And there's like absolutely nothing wrong with that. And in your 20s, it's so difficult to find someone, I think, who it's harder to ask the question, what do you want? Because it's okay. It seems more okay not to have an answer. Whereas, you know, in your 40s, when somebody, I can imagine that people are who they're going to be. But it was important to me that you were not 23 and dating in Boston and that you had a real perspective. And just for those who don't know, can you sort of tell us where you were when you were coming into this in terms of where you were in your singleness? Your singleness. I say that again like the anthropologist. As a single woman
I was
living in Boston.
Just super
wild.
Single. And, you know, but I, because, you know, I'd never been married, so people would be like, oh, you haven't even gone through a divorce? Like, you know, and I was like, I know, I haven't weathered that storm because I made a decision to, you know, maybe not take the first or second opportunity that maybe could have been a marriage. But I think I was definitely like realizing I was getting older. And so I had to think of like, you know, and I'm an only child. So I was like, all right, I got to think of how I'm going to navigate life as an older person and a single person. And like, you know, I have my small 401k, but I don't have a double income to fall back on. So, I started switching my mindset to like my community of friends and not thinking, not so much focusing on possibly having a partner where we would support each other in the future. And so when I came into this, I think I was a little more relaxed about it. Plus I also had, you know, a team behind me, which I talk about on the podcast and which we talk about, which people don't get, you know, and so I was still single, but I was open-minded, like I, you know, constantly am about possibly meeting someone.
There were a few things we did together that didn't make the podcast. And just for time purposes, and one thing that I wanted to explore was that I don't know if any single people have been told this, like, you should go to a museum. My friend Pete said that to me once. He said, I always thought you'd meet someone at a museum. And I was like, really? Like, in like the gift shop, like in looking, like I have a really short attention span. So I'm not someone who is like sitting at the MFA and thinking about life. So I was, but he was like, you know, like a smart guy, someone who's at a museum. Right. She just said, that's Pete. It's true. He's not here. I can make fun of him. So, but I have heard that a lot. And, but specifically when people say that in Boston, they say, have you been to First Fridays at the MFA? And I'm like, when I was in my 20s, I went with roommates to the First Fridays at the MFA. And when I told people I was taking Aaron to places to meet people, people would be like, have you been to First Fridays at the MFA? Has anyone in the room been to First Fridays at the MFA? Has anyone...
One of the hot guys that have been to...
Has anyone met someone they went on a date with at First Fridays at the MFA? Only Aaron. So First Fridays at the MFA is lovely. I highly recommend it. But the idea that it's like a secret single. So it's not. So we went, explain what we did that didn't make it onto the podcast.
So we went to one of the third Thursdays at the Gardner Museum. And I'd never been and I wanted to go because I felt like it was a better, maybe possibly a better mix of people. in my limited knowledge of what, I don't know. But anyway, I thought it'd be different. I was like, cool. So we met there on a Thursday night, and it was winter, and so Meredith had been at...
I was shooting the commercial for Primark, the sponsor of season 2 of the Love Letters podcast, hashtag Primark, hashtag buy Primark. So I had been in, like, I was, like, out of my mind.
A shirt to wear.
Sure. A shirt to wear.
Spaghetti sauce on.
That you can get spaghetti sauce on.
And it's all in there.
It's all in there. Oh, my God. You listened. You really did.
So anyway, she had come from this long shoot, so we're like, all right, let's get a snack first. So we sat in the restaurant. And so because we sat and had dinner, we missed the entire event a little bit.
So this is the thing,
like...
like,
oh, shit. Like, because we just didn't know.
I will derail anyone potentially having sex. Anyone. And I will do it with food quickly. Like, I got there and I was like, I have to help Aaron meet people. But there's a restaurant here.
You did that to me in high school. You, like, would you...
Because everyone would always rather just have a nice meal.
Yeah. So it was good to go and just to catch up. And I did do a couple of the events that were left. But it was good to go and see. And it was really busy. But it wasn't quite the pickup crowd. It wasn't... People were there together, either as dates or as a group of friends. So it had a nice vibe. And I was really excited to see so many different artists from the community and with their families and just different kinds of people. And I was like, okay, I'm glad we came and tried it, sort of. And then I would go back and try it out.
I mean, one thing that I was told that night was that depending on the theme, the crowd is very different. And this was another thing that I learned. It's like when you're at an event like that and you're looking for single people on behalf of someone else, I had like a whole new lens. Like I'd see a man walking around and I would like, kind of follow him a little bit and be like, is he with anybody? What's he doing? How would I talk to him? And this is not something, I mean, I think it's in episode 4 that we went to the bar and I realized for the first time in my life, we were with my friend Sarah and I was like, for the first time, I'm looking for wedding rings.
Oh, yeah.
Just to, because I didn't, you know, this is something I probably should have noticed before in my life, but I never had. But of all the things we talked about doing, what did you think? Was there anything that surprised you to do that with a team or something that felt intuitively right to do or wrong to do? I mean, I feel like we did all sorts of things. And I think you mentioned in the final episode thinking that when we asked her to do this, that suddenly all these amazing things were going to happen. And then it was like same shit, different day.
Yeah. I mean, I think I was delusional, obviously. But I was like, I've never done this, so this must be great. Because you're like, I still hold on to a bit of positivity because you have to. No, I mean, I'm glad I got to take a class because everyone tells you to take a class. And so we showed up on a rainy Sunday morning and it's all in the podcast. It's all older couples. And I was like, oh shit. I was like, I picked the wrong one. And I was like freaking out because I was like, I made them come here. You had just been sick. Scott was sick. And they were like, it's cool. And so I just calmed down and was like, I'm just going to take in the experience. And maybe this will be good on a date down the road.
But I do think it's important to note about the class, which is that it was an $80 class. Yeah. So that's 2 tickets, $160. The Globe paid. Yeah. They I don't know if they've noticed that they did, but they absolutely did. And that's the kind of thing where I thought in that moment, if we were two people who signed up for a class only for the purposes of meeting someone and we had paid that money, we would have been pissed. So like, it has to be something you want to do anyway.
Right. And that's what we talked about. And so it's like, it was great because it wasn't on my bill. So I wasn't feeling like, oh, I just wasted this money. But
by the way, the Globe did pay for Aaron's OK Cupid, which is like the weirdest.
How much longer are they going to pay for
probably
that,
like another month. But it's like, oh, the weirdest thing to expense. Like when I filed my expenses, I was like, Aaron's dating profile. One funny thing that hadn't occurred to me was that I kind of thought that as the podcast aired, I might hear from people saying, I would like to date Aaron. And what were we going to do about that? And how would we vet those people? And one of the reasons that has not happened, beyond the fact that I have now read the demographics of the podcast, and it is a lot of women, which is weird because the column is not. It's very split. But the podcast is women and young women. But also because people seemed to think that I had met Aaron, recorded an entire season, and then aired it like Survivor. Like everybody knows who won, but they're not going to tell you. So do you want to talk about your own friends, Rhea? Yeah.
My friends were like, oh my God, do you get married at the end? Does that happen? Are you married? Have you got married? And I was like, guys, I'm here. Like this is happening, you know, in real time. And Meredith would tell me that people think it's a setup. I'm like, oh my God.
My own friends were like, what happens? And I'm like, I don't know. She hasn't gotten back to me. We're you know, I would say that what you heard in the podcast was like a, what would you say, 2 to 3 week delay? I mean, there was a delay, but yeah. not it wasn't like it was done.
Yeah.
And in fact, when we had our last follow-up for episode 10, it was only probably
like
a week before.
Oh, yeah,
2 weeks
it was
before
a week
it aired.
Or 2 weeks. We had recorded and then it aired.
So when we left you, you had been on some dates with Art Dad. So how would you classify, without prying too much for posterity, how would you classify yourself right now?
I'm still single. And I'm still on OkCupid as a paying member for another month. And after that, I'm not sure what's going to happen.
Okay. So,
which is super vague, and I'm sorry about that.
Okay. That's okay. But that, I think, answers the question. I wanted to ask one more. How are we doing on time? One more question. And this can be for both of you. I think it was last week that I was reading the story in The Atlantic by Julie Beck. Does that sound snobby? That I'm like, I was reading this story in The Atlantic.
I'm going to fuck with you relentlessly.
No, well, I wanted to talk to you both about it because when I read it last week, I was like, I need to talk about this on a podcast, and we were already wrapped. So I was like, this will be in the bonus episode. But the whole story was about the concept of being ready for a relationship and how she even goes into when that phrase started being used. That it was not, like, if you sort of search the history, no one in the 1940s was saying, I'm not ready for a relationship, right? And so they track when it starts to happen, where it's like in 1950, it starts to be uttered.
Really?
Yeah, I'll send you the link.
I can't read that.
What? Huh?
It's just too long. It's too many words.
It's too many words. Well, okay, I'll boil it down for you. But then it's 100%, 140% more by 2010, and she talks to this professor of history and family studies at Evergreen State College. And this woman says this is likely because of a reversal in how people think about marriage and commitment that occurred over the course of decades. The timing of the word is just about perfectly aligned with a sea change in people's conceptions of marriage. It used to be that you got married in order to grow up, settle down, start saving up for a future home, move away from your teenage preoccupation with yourself, and learn how to handle a relationship. Now you are done. You do it all on your own. Like, I am not in a place in my life where I'm ready. And it informs so much of how we date. I've used this, like, I'm not ready. I'm not my best self. I'm not a finished product. But I think it can be really damaging because it's as if we're supposed to be done growing, you know? And I just wanted to know what you guys thought about that, especially, you know, because one of the things I've loved, I've learned so much from Aaron and love spending time with Aaron. And this could have been super weird. I could have picked some person where I was like, I don't like her. And instead I'm like, what's Aaron doing? Does Aaron want to come?
Good casting.
Yeah, good casting, right? But Aaron can do something that I can't do, which is to do two things at the same time. In the middle of this podcast, you lost your job. Yeah. And that sucked, but was absolutely for the best.
Yeah.
And I'm the kind of person where I'm like, well, I can't date right now. I'm working on a book. Well, I can't date right now. We're recording the podcast. I mean, there are many reasons, but the idea of investing my emotions into many things at once, like I'm not ready, comes up a lot because I'm not done with the thing I'm doing. And at no point did you say, I have to stop doing one thing because I'm doing another thing. And that meant a lot to me to see. So I wanted to know what you think about that.
I just felt like maybe I compartmentalized things. So when I lost that job, as I talked about a little bit on this podcast, but more on the Science of Happiness, I'm always looking for the right job. So it's like if I put up, and I'm always looking for a partner. So it's like I've learned to juggle a lot of things at once, which, but I guess I'm just so used to it, the ups and downs of employment and the ups and downs of dating. So it was just par for the course. But, you know, it was the Science of Happiness that I wrote right away and was like, I just lost my job. I can't do the exercise that you've given me because it's I don't like it and it's making me depressed.
Yeah, for those who don't know, Erin did a crossover episode with another podcast, The Science of Happiness, and they talked to her about her employment.
Yeah, and so they gave me another exercise. It was way better and I could incorporate it. So I guess I felt like the podcast was just a bigger part of my life and more important than any job would be. And so I wanted I didn't feel like it would be hard to navigate. It's not a great answer, but I guess I've been doing both for so long that I was used to it.
Okay. Brett, do you have anything, thoughts on just the whole waiting? I mean, waiting until you are a finished product, because some of the best couples I know met quite young and they were able to really grow together.
I know it's making me think a lot about Ben. So Ben's like almost 10 years younger than I am. So like, but yeah, I mean like, so 38 and 28 when we got married, and it just makes me think of like what an absolute train wreck I was. I mean, I don't remember 28 at all because I was probably drunk or something, but like, I mean, I was like super duper like doing weird shit in bathrooms, like until I was like, what, 33, 32, 33 or whatever. So and I remember being in a 10-year relationship, right? Where I was like, wait, marriage, what? And it wasn't that I didn't necessarily want to get married or I wasn't even sure about having kids. It just never, I don't know. I was just like, I don't know. I just don't think about it. And then, but then by the time, I remember on our first date being like, do you know how old I am? And, you know, because we didn't meet online.
It's the best thing. I like to say that on first dates. Do you know how old I am?
And he was like,
super sexy.
Like, you know, because, I don't know. I mean, it was just like a weird thing because I was like, look, this is what I want, da 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 da. But I don't know. I always, I don't, we'll talk about this later, but like I always kind of feel like I'm so happy that I did it at 38 because I just feel like I just didn't have all the mishigas, right? Like I knew, that's your Yiddish word of the day, if you didn't know that, like I was not so fucked up in the head at 38. Like I had my act together more so, and I wasn't doing weird shit in bathrooms as much and like, which is fine. But like, you know, I don't know. I felt like I had it. I really felt like, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I see it both ways.
I knew myself.
I see that, but I also like the thought that you can do weird shit in bathrooms with someone and grow with them.
We've done weird shit in like, yeah.
I shouldn't have said it that way. I'm inviting it.
Can I also say that I guess I also could continue to do it and look for someone because I felt like I was like, well, the job stuff's kind of a disaster, but I still sort of know who I am and know what I want in a relationship. So I was like on better footing.
Well, for Erin's participation this season, I got her gift bag of some dumb stuff. So, and I just want to say the one thing that did not make its way into the podcast that I deeply regret is that after Erin lost her job, I met her at a bar and she came in and she said, "I got bangs." And if there is any statement that overwhelmingly is an example of what one does and says when they are going through many life transitions. And in fact, I immediately texted Amy and our other producer, Scott, and I wrote, "Erin got bangs." And Scott wrote back, "Get audio."
So can I just say that I saw Tan France a few nights ago.
Woo! Oh,
with some girlfriends who were here. Yeah. It was wonderful. He's lovely. So anyway, he wrote this book, which I started reading. It's wonderful. Everyone should get it. And he wrote, you know, he writes advice, and he has a lot of girlfriends. He's like, please don't come to me crying when you give yourself bangs. I'm tired of hearing it. You know what's going to happen. Just don't get bangs, but don't put me through that. And I was like, Tan understands. So, yeah, I got some bangs.
Yeah.
It's still crazy, but...
With that, you guys made my first live podcast taping episode very easy, so thank you. Thank you to Erin. And thank you to Brett for everything. The three of us will be around, mingle, get drinks. What's the drink you were drinking? What's it called?
It's either blind or deaf and a guy's name. Sorry about that.
Just the list of things I'll be, it's a blind Paul.
Thank you. It's delicious.
It's delicious.
Please get it.
And please return to Beaumarket and the Comedy Studio. Thanks to them for hosting us. You guys are wonderful. Have a great night.
Thanks again to the Comedy Studio for hosting us and to Eli Levy for recording the live show. Our production team includes Amy Padula, Ned Porter, and Scott Hellman. Love Letters is a production of the Boston Globe and PRX. We're online at loveletters.show. I'm Meredith Goldstein. Thanks for listening.
From PRX.